You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Yes, welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am not Chris Spangle. I am Brian Nichols of The Brian Nichols Show, a part of the We Are Libertarians Network, joined by the crew over at the Boss Hog of Liberty. Well, rather, a part of the crew. Today I'm joined by Dakota Davis on the We Are Libertarians Network. Dakota, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good, yeah. You said the Boss Hog of Liberty crew. I'm just half of it right now.
Half the crew, obviously, with Jeremiah Morrill over there. He's busy running for was it city council or something like that?
Yeah, he's running for county council here in Henry County, Indiana.
County council.
Yeah, he's doing a really good job. He's been getting signs out, attending meetings, and got a couple billboards up. So we're moving right along over here.
Rock and roll, and obviously I'm over here in the. The cradle of liberty, as I like to call it, in Philadelphia, PA. But if you come and visit, you might want to leave pretty darn quick because today it's a balmy 75 degrees on as we're recording September 25th here a Tuesday, and it's pouring rain. So you'll do a quick high by as you swing through Philadelphia. And obviously for the folks who are joining us today, who are used to the traditional We Are Libertarian show as hosted by Chris Spangle, you notice Dear Leader is missing. From today's show. Chris is actually out with a work conference, so he is unavailable for podcasting this week. So you will be joined by a lot of the voices from the We Are Libertarians crew today, starting off with myself, Brian Nichols from The Brian Nichols Show, and Dakota Davis, one half of the Boss Hog of Liberty crew there in Newcastle, Indiana. And with that being said, today we wanted to focus on some topics that are taking place in our contemporary world with regards to the Judge Brett Kavanaugh being nominated for the Supreme Court, and with that, the allegations that have followed through in terms of sexual misconduct from ranging back 36 years ago with a former high school cohort who has accused him of sexual misconduct, and more recently, someone from college back his freshman year who has come up with new allegations. So with that, what we wanted to do is to be able to present the information, and Dakota and I beforehand actually spoke about this off air, is we've found that too often everything that's being promoted out there, whether you're pro-Kavanaugh, or against Kavanaugh, the you know hashtag I believe or believe all women or hashtag believe Kavanaugh, let's get rid of the hyperbolic nonsense and let's actually discuss the facts. Let's go through really step by step what has happened. So behind the scenes, Dakota went out of his way and he built a fantastic timeline of events to really showcase step by step what has happened when this all started. So Dakota, let's start off. Back in July, obviously Anthony Kennedy, he's retiring from Supreme Court. He's been there for you know basically a generation. So let's start off there. Anthony Kennedy resigns July 9th. What happens next?
Yeah, so like you said, Anthony Kennedy, he resigns from the Supreme Court, or he notifies President Trump that he's now being a senior in the Supreme Court. So which basically means he's leaving and retiring. And this, of course, I have here. This was July 9th is whenever President Donald Trump first announced the nomination to the Supreme Court. And during the Trump 2016 campaign, one of the main issues that I heard, I don't know if you heard the same thing from just the average voter where you are, but over here in Indiana, there was a lot of talk about, well, we need a conservative in office so that mm-hmm. we can get conservative members appointed to the Supreme Court. And as we know that just a year and a half in, Trump's already been able to place two members on the Supreme Court.
I actually tweeted about that because I hated the argument that people were saying, like, a vote for Trump is a vote for a conservative Supreme Court. And I was like, I don't really trust Donald Trump. And then you see him appoint Gorsuch, and now with Kennedy resigning, and then his ability to appoint another judge, and obviously we saw he appointed Brett Kavanaugh, I said, you know, hey, it as much as I hated the argument that was being brought up in the election, those people now... they can kind of, you know, put their hat on that and say, see, I told you so. And they're right. They can definitely point at us and say, yeah, I told you so.
Yeah, if there's anything that that the Trump voters could really hang their hat on, it was definitely that. And it's obviously played out really well for them, because there were two Supreme Court justices that were put in place by Ronald Reagan. So everybody was expecting it, knew what was going to happen. And, yeah, so Trump's... Trump definitely has been appointing conservatives to the Supreme Court, and mainly just it seems like both of the people seem to be people that have, in their opinions that I've seen, have really done a good job of trying to follow the Constitution. Of course, we have Kavanaugh, who was really horrible on the Fourth Amendment back whenever the Patriot Act was first being talked about, but... other than that, he seems to have pretty good opinions. I mean, he's got over 300 of them. You're going to find things that you disagree with, but all in all, I thought that it was a pretty decent pick.
And I think if you look at a lot of libertarians or conservatives, they looked at the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh with a little bit of, I don't want to say apprehension, but he wasn't the most conservative or dare I say libertarian justice that was available. Obviously, I mean, Trump knocked it out of the park with Neil Gorsuch. But obviously there was Judge Amy Barrett. Some people were even looking at someone like Don Willette down from Texas. And then you had people like Mike Lee being floated as possible replacements for Anthony Kennedy. But, I mean, as much as I don't like to give Trump credit, well, I'll give him credit where credit's due. He kind of stuck with the precedence that was established, where basically you would never want to appoint a justice that was so polar opposite, or at the very least, so I guess more far to whatever skew left, skew right they may be, that he actually, you know, appointed the more moderate conservative justice, very much in the lines of a judge, you know, Chief Justice Roberts or someone in that kind of ilk. So he appointed the safe pick, which was Judge Kavanaugh. And going back to our timeline, obviously July 9th, that's when that first really started to take place. Yeah,
and more to your point there with Kavanaugh being like a moderate, one of the things that I hated seeing was people on Twitter and on Facebook and the social media world who were freaking out because of Trump's Supreme Court pick and saying how horrible he was, how he's a, you know, you get the classics of a fascist and a racist. And he was not a moderate conservative, a very middle of the road Republican. And the person he was replacing, Justice Kennedy, was exactly the same way. He was a very moderate Republican himself. So it's like tomato, tomato there. You were replacing the same with the same for the
most
part.
And that's so the whole idea.
Right, yeah. Well, you don't want too much shakeup if you like how the Supreme Court has been voting in your term, right? So that's where that line of thinking comes from.
And the absolute insanity. I mean, before Kavanaugh was actually announced as the replacement for Justice Kennedy, if you were one of the ones who joined watching live the announcement who was going to be the replacement for Judge Kennedy, there are protesters lined up in front of the Supreme Court building with signs literally labeled out for any possible justice saying stop and then fill in the blank, whether it's stop Kavanaugh, stop Barrett, you name the justice. So it's not that people were opposed to Brett Kavanaugh. It was that people were opposed to whoever the hell Trump appointed, you know, regardless of his judicial philosophy.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know if you watched the video or if you read the transcript of the speech that Trump gave whenever he was appointing Kavanaugh, but it was Trump spoke very, very highly of the man. He talked about all of his opinions, the things that he liked. He said that he wasn't just a only vote to the based on his opinion, but someone who puts his opinion aside to focus on the credibility in the Constitution. So I, hearing the things come out of his mouth, like, you know, it's coming from probably someone who's one of his many people that write his speeches.
Yes.
But it was a good speech. You know what I mean? So it's if nothing else, it tried to instill some more confidence in the more centrist and moderate people who were looking at it without the two-party bias.
And behind the scenes, I mean, Brett Kavanaugh was on the short list for Mitt Romney back in 2012, were Mitt Romney to in fact defeat Barack Obama, which obviously he didn't. But Kavanaugh's been talked up as, you know, kind of that moderate, you know, Mitt Romney, John McCain, George W. Bush type of nominee. Again, much in line like that of Justice Roberts. So there's nothing really extreme about Kavanaugh, but obviously now that he's attached to the Trump name, it associates all this negative connotation, being, you know, he's a racist, he's a sexist, he's a homophobe, and you go down the list. And that kind of leads now to the next, I guess, part of the timeline. So behind the scenes, July 30th, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, now she's a psychology professor in California, she sent a letter to Senator Dianne Feinstein, and Dianne Feinstein is the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And in this letter, she alleges that Kavanaugh, back in 1986, so back when they were in high school, I believe they were seniors, that Kavanaugh had sexually assaulted her. Now, the contents of the letter, it basically says that Kavanaugh was drunk at a party with, I think it was like four or so other individuals. At this party, Ford felt uncomfortable, so she ended up going up to the stairs where Kavanaugh, and then I believe it was one of his friends, Mark Judge, stormed up the stairs after them, or after her rather, pushed her into a room, and then drunkenly started to try and feel her up, undress her clothes. And when she started to vocally, you know, protest this, she evidently had her mouth covered by Kavanaugh. Ends up, Mark Judge jumps in the bed, pushes Kavanaugh off. With that, she runs out into the bathroom. Kavanaugh and Judge are, you know, drunk off their asses. They, you know, stumbled back down the stairs, and that was the incident. So in this letter that Ford has released to, or she'd rather sent to Dianne Feinstein, Feinstein doesn't release the letter. Mind you, now again, Feinstein is the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And obviously having something like this type of information being alleged sexual assault, it's kind of a big deal when you're talking about someone who's potentially going to be holding quite literally the highest seat that any judge can possibly hold in the United States.
Right, a very big deal, especially whenever you give the political climate right now. You know, just like if you take a gauge to the political climate and see how hot it is, and this is, it kind of blows your mind whenever you think about that she had this letter in late July. And Donald Trump, the president, whenever he found out, he said that whenever Senator Feinstein sat with Judge Kavanaugh for a long period of time, a long, long meeting, she had this letter. And he says, why didn't she bring it up? Why didn't the Democrats bring it up then? Because they obstruct and because they resist, and that is their name of their campaign against me. So he's like, basically like you and I, like, what the heck? Why didn't this ever get brought up? You had a meeting with the man. You sat across from him, and you had a letter that said that he sexually assaulted a woman. Like, that, it does seem fishy to me. It's not one of those things where I read it and I thought, oh, well, this just completely dismisses all of the allegations. This is obviously fake. But it is something that we definitely need to keep in mind whenever you're talking about the allegations against him. Because
agreed.
It just seems weird, but it's not so weird to just go ahead and throw everything out the window. Weird.
And to preface this entire discussion about Kavanaugh, the alleged incidents of sexual misconduct, Dakota and I are no way, shape, or form trying to shame Christine Ford, or as we'll discuss, I forget her name, but I think her last name is Ramirez, who's the second accuser of Kavanaugh. But what we're rather trying to do right now is just lay out quite literally the facts. You know, this is the timeline of events that happened. And with that, I think it's important, and Dakota and I, again, we discussed it beforehand, is that people are so drawn to one side or the other in this, I don't even say argument, it's just this massive, I guess, tipping point in America. Because, I mean, quite literally, he will be one of the deciding votes in the Supreme Court. So you have those on the left who are, you know, I don't want to assume their intentions, but I would say that they're definitely more in the camp of trying to support Christine Ford because of the fact that her accusations will bring down someone like a Kavanaugh. But to the contrary, I think there are a lot on the right who are saying, well, allegations be damned, we need him on the Supreme Court. Going back to what we discussed originally, that's part of the reason a lot of these people voted for Donald Trump. And I forget the tweet. I think Trump even said that. He's like, a lot of people voted for me because of the fact that I would be appointing all these Supreme Court justices. And then he followed up saying, remember the midterms. So obviously Trump's getting ready to use this for gaining some electoral pull as well. So back to the timeline, August 10th. Now, Dakota, you mentioned behind the scenes, obviously, Kavanaugh, he's going around to all these senators. He's meeting with them privately. Feinstein doesn't even bring this up. August 10th, Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley announces that the confirmation hearings for Kavanaugh were going to be beginning in the beginning of September. Democrats complain that Republicans are trying to rush Kavanaugh's confirmation through the Senate without allowing all the documents from Kavanaugh's tenure as an attorney in the administration of George W. Bush. So Kavanaugh has over 300 opinions available on public record. Many Democratic senators were on record saying that 1 month was not enough time to read all 300 opinions. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dakota, the timeline that's been laid out for Judge Kavanaugh in his confirmation hearings, it's pretty consistent with any other Supreme Court justice who's been nominated. Yeah.
As far as my understanding goes, that's how I've been hearing it from the different news podcasts and other stations that I listen to. It's not anything that's been out of the ordinary. So the Senate Democrats that are trying to push against this, they know that it's not out of the ordinary. So they're using the reason that we have this on record saying that 1 month wasn't enough time to go over all 300 opinions. The reason that's in there is because he had obviously a lot of opinions on record, and they're saying, look, you gave us all the stuff that we have to read through, and we just don't have enough time to do this, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where that comes from. They know that it's a typical amount of time, but anything, you know, I mean, just like playing any kind of game, as soon as there's a weakness in your opponent and something that you can latch on to, you want to do that, right? So I can't say that I would be doing any different if I was a Democrat in the Senate. You know, it's just
politics.
How it's done, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's whatever in that regard. But it is a silly, very silly excuse because of the amounts of full time staff that the senators have. The fact that they passed the omnibus bill and they didn't care that they didn't have enough time to read that. So it's,
I mean, heck, Obamacare was, I mean, the whole Nancy Pelosi, we have to pass the bill in order to know what's in it. I mean, that they admitted they quite literally didn't read the bill. So like you're saying, I mean, this it's strictly politics.
Yeah, totally. No, so, you're absolutely right, Brian.
So here we are. We're between August 10th and then the September 4th confirmation hearing. So at this entire time between August and September, Dianne Feinstein, again, she has this letter from Christine Ford with the alleged sexual assault. Nothing's being discussed. September 4th through the 7th, Kavanaugh begins his testifying for the 3 days at the confirmation hearings. And on the fourth day, legal experts and other witnesses testified about his nominations. Obviously, during this entire time, we had the likes of Cory Booker and his I am Spartacus moment. You had Kamala Harris raising hell. And then in the chamber itself, you had protesters. You had, what's her name? Not Laura Loomer. She was the other one who got riled out with the guy doing the auctioneer. Who's the Women's March lady's name?
I can't think of it right now.
You know who I'm talking about, though.
I was really hoping you're going to carry me on that one.
I can't think of the heck what her name is, but you know, she's you know, screaming at the top of her lungs. You know, in the actual confirmation hearing, you have all these protesters being taken out. But even then, throughout this entire process of the confirmation hearing, no allegations have been raised. Nothing's been brought up under oath, and that's a key part of this. Under oath during this entire confirmation process. Nobody has asked Kavanaugh to put him on the record legally under threat of perjury to actually get him to say one way or another to address these allegations. So,
You're talking about under oath. You're talking about under oath, and that is something that we need to keep in mind as we get through this entire thing, right? So it's not. We need to keep in mind who is saying what is happening, and whether or not what they're saying is under oath, and whether or not they are willing to go under oath is something that's also very important during my little bit of research and my listening that I've done from other shows on this case. It's danced around a lot, and I really do think it's something important that we keep in mind as we get through this.
Agreed. And now here we are. So it's just a couple weeks ago, September 12th. So at this point in time, they're just getting ready to do the committee vote to move him forward, him being Kavanaugh, forward to a full Senate body vote. Dianne Feinstein does this cryptic message from her office saying, "I've obtained this letter from an unnamed source that is very concerning, and I'm forwarding this letter to the FBI." Now, behind the scenes, a lot of rumors have been going out about this possible sexual misconduct that took place that has Kavanaugh as the lead accused. So in this, the Bureau of FBI, the FBI, puts the letter in Kavanaugh's background check file, but they did not officially launch a criminal investigation, in part because the statute of limitations on alleged sexual assault expired years earlier. And correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the FBI technically can't do anything because of the jurisdiction where the supposed event took place, correct?
Right, so that's absolutely correct. So there have been other allegations of sexual misconduct with people in federal office, and things that have garnered national media attention that the FBI has investigated, and a lot of the Senate Democrats and a lot of the pundits on CNN, MSNBC have been bringing up the fact that, well, oh, look, the FBI is just controlled by Trump and they're not looking into this. Well, that's not
the
exactly
deep state FBI.
Yeah, so but coming from the left this time, but the whole idea is that these issues, if they were part of the federal government in other cases, then the FBI can investigate those. However, since this happened in 1982 allegedly, and it happened in some random house in the state of Maryland, then that would be left up to the state that it happened in. And it's a 35-year-old case, 36.
Right.
So it's way past the statute of limitations on sexual assault. So it just doesn't make sense for the FBI to go into it. And technically speaking, they can't.
Yep, and it would require, I believe, the victim to officially press charges. Correct.
Right. So she has to press charges against Brett Kavanaugh now that he is in a federal position of power, technically speaking, in order for him to be under investigation by the FBI.
So here we are. It's Friday, September 14th, and all of a sudden, the allegations from Ford are finally brought to the surface by the New Yorker magazine. Now, this entire story that was promoted on that Friday was completely bare bones, did not include Ford's name. So basically, it was just a very brief description of the said incident. And to that, Kavanaugh says in a statement, "I categorically and unequivocally deny this allegation. I did not do this back in high school or at any time." Now, obviously, Kavanaugh, he's trying to be as direct as possible, because we saw back in the 1990s with Bill Clinton and the, well, it depends on what the definition of is, you had the lawyer speak. So since then, there's been a very big push for anybody who is under any sort of allegation to, when they're giving their denial or whatnot, to make it as crystal clear with no loopholes whatsoever to show that they're being serious. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're totally right there. And one other thing is that typically speaking, whenever you deny an allegation now, you say, no, I didn't do that. And that's it. You give a direct answer. You offer no type of specific detail that can later be brought into an investigation. Kind of like anything you do or say can be used against you in a court of law, right? So we don't want, if I am Brett Kavanaugh's lawyer, I don't want him to say anything other than nope, you know?
Yep. As little as possible. I mean, Ben Shapiro, I listen to him every now and then, and he was talking about Donald Trump, just an aside here, and he's like, as a lawyer, Donald Trump is quite literally the worst type of client you could possibly have, because if you're a lawyer, you want your client to say as little as possible, because the more you talk, the more you're opening up for more issues to happen.
Yeah, so we saw that on September 14th with Kavanaugh. It's watching it, you think, oh, this is what he's trying to do, right? So it's pretty cut and dry. You can see this is what he's trying right here, and it gets a little bit more interesting later on, as we'll find out.
That's right, because now we're gonna go 2 days later, and it's funny. I remember this happening because I was in between. I'm a nerd. I was in between matches of Fortnite. And I got a push notification on my phone from NBC, and it said, Washington Post publishes interview with Christine Ford, Kavanaugh sexual misconduct accuser. And I was like, whoa, time out. I got to cancel this game of Fortnite and actually read this story. So in this... go ahead.
You should cancel a game of Fortnite anyway. we play PUBG around here.
See, I was never into the Fortnite realm until one of my really good buddies. Actually, his name is Connor Moriarty. He did the new logo design for my show, and he said, "Hey Brian, listen, I get it. It's a weird looking game. It's all cartoony." He's like, "Give it." And I tried it. I hated it. And he's like, "Give it 15 matches. After 15 matches, you'll be obsessed." And I was like, "Okay." So I took a Saturday, and I just started to try to play it. And I was like, by game 10, I'm like, "I still hate this." And then by game 14, I was like, "Oh, I don't really hate it too much." And then by the 15th game, I was like, "Okay, it's not too bad." And then the damage was done. But I heard PUBG is pretty good.
So addicting. I was the same way with PUBG. I didn't play it, and then one of my friends was like, "Hey, play this. You want to play match your thing?" I'm like, "Sure." And then I ended up winning my very first match, and I was like, "Okay, well, this is going to be my life from now on."
And PUBG's a first-person shooter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Fortnite is the more cartoony-looking third-person shooter. I was never a big third-person shooter player. I did like Star Wars Battlefront back, the old Battlefront back with PS2. That was fun as a third-person shooter. Yeah. And then when the new one came out back in 2015, they went to first-person. So I've always been like the Halo type of player, the Call of Duty, that kind of player.
Yeah, I still think the best third-person shooter game would be the first Red Dead Redemption that came out.
Classic.
Xbox. Oh, yeah. Classic. That was a good one.
It was between that or Gun. Gun came out with the original 360 launch. I used to love that game too. That was a lot of fun. But we got a little off track there. So in between my Fortnite matches, I'm reading this story. So in this story that she did in the interview with the Washington Post, Ford alleges, again, the story we talked about earlier. Kavanaugh pins her down in the bed in high school, tries to remove her clothes, puts his hand over her mouth to stop her from screaming. She says in the story she feared that Kavanaugh might inadvertently kill her. And then, obviously, we mentioned earlier, judge comes in, knocks him off in a drunken stupor. She escapes to the bathroom. They drunkenly walk down the stairs. Kavanaugh, at this point now that he has actually a name to the supposed victim, he says, you know, again, categorically denies the incident ever even took place. So now we go ahead that Monday. Senator Grassley scrapped the confirmation vote for Kavanaugh that the committee was actually supposed to hold back on the 21st. And he says instead the panel is going to hold a hearing on the 24th, which would have been yesterday, as we're recording here on the 25th, the Tuesday, to hear from both Ford and Kavanaugh about the sexual assault allegations. And then an aside, contrary to popular belief, Senate and congressional committees do hold the power to issue subpoenas, hold investigations, and hold hearings. So if you are subpoenaed to a congressional hearing or a Senate hearing, you are required by law to show up. Otherwise, you could actually be, I think it's in contempt of court, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's something that I did not know until I started doing more research into this. Yeah, you can totally be subpoenaed by a Senate or congressional committee, and they can hold their own investigations. They can conduct their own investigations, conduct their own hearings. It's very much just like a court of law whenever you get put into a congressional or a Senate committee.
And that's Eric Holder was the first sitting U.S. Attorney General, I believe, to be held in contempt of the Senate because he did not appear before the Senate to answer questions with regards to, I think it was the Fast and Furious gun running back in 2014, 15, somewhere in there, somewhere in that timeline. He's long gone, but as I had Remzo Martinez on my show last week, and he did a whole investigative journalism on Eric Holder, and he thinks he's going to run for president in 2020, which I wouldn't be surprised. But moving ahead.
This is the first I've heard of Eric Holder maybe making a run for 2020.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the dude's got the coattails of Obama to run on. He's always been a very active political organizer behind the scenes. So, I mean, it's going to be a bloodbath. Remember, like, 2015 with the Republicans running? It's going to be like that, only 10 times worse, because now they have one target and one target only. That's Trump.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, and dude, I can't tell you how great it's been. You know how it is being in a media role and watching all of this, watching the Trump administration go down. It's like just endless content for days. It's been
literally
incredible. And I cannot wait until the 2020 election. Like, the 2018 midterm has been fun enough, but 2020 is going to be nuts.
I'm calling it right now. Michael Avenatti is going to be the nominee. I got the feeling. I think I had an exclusive because the first person I actually ever heard state unequivocally that they thought Michael Avenatti was going to be the nominee was back a couple months ago. I had Jeffrey Tucker on, and he called it. He's like, and as only Jeffrey Tucker could say about, you know, his bombastic rhetoric, and, you know, Jeffrey is. He's got all these amazing euphemisms, and he just goes off in this very flowery language describing how certain he was that Michael Avenatti was going to be the poster boy for the Democratic Party. And we're watching it right now, and we'll discuss a little bit more down the line, but, like, Avenatti has been all over either CNN or MSNBC, you name the network, trying to promote these various potential accusers of not only Kavanaugh, but of Donald Trump. He, obviously, Avenatti is most well-known being, as Tucker Carlson calls him, the creepy porn lawyer for Stormy Daniels, which is just such a stupid moniker. But nonetheless, that's how he's identified as. But
I'm still sticking with Cory Booker making being the nominee for president.
Dude, I think Trump will beat the piss out of him.
Okay, so I think so as well, but I just think that he's got this certain energy around him, and he says all of the outlandish things that a lot of people on the we just hate Trump left love and absolutely.
That's true.
But we'll see. We'll get there.
He just seems so rehearsed. Like, everything he says, like, so we're going to talk, well, I guess we're not going to talk about, but back in the actual confirmation hearings, before the whole Christine Ford thing came out, you know, he's there doing this whole speech of how, you know, I'm going to release these documents knowing full well that it's in violation of Senate rules, and I'm doing so knowingly with the understanding that I could be removed from the Senate. This is my Spartacus moment. And it's just like, dude, you're way too into this role.
Yeah, he has sunk his teeth into this role, and a lot of his base and a lot of the people that follow the talking heads in mainstream media absolutely eat that up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he it's what's sad though is he has changed so much from who he was as a senator, like just a year or so removed. I mean, he was working a lot with Rand Paul to do a lot of criminal justice reform stuff. And now that, you know, to be anti-Trump is the best thing to do to promote your career, he's embraced that persona, you know, 100% full bore. And it's just so infuriating because, and we're going to discuss at the end of the show, the ramifications of what's happening currently with this conversation with Kavanaugh, but he's embraced this tribal, almost like cult hero, almost. Like, he's the figurehead, or one of the figureheads of the anti-never Trump, Trump's a fascist movement, and he's so into this role that it's like he's put the blinders on to any real substantive policy, and he's just going to go out of his way to do whatever he can to destroy Trump to push himself further ahead.
Well, I mean, and it's working for him, too.
Yeah.
just look at it. The only people who, like you were saying, one or two years ago, the only people who knew who Cory Booker was were the people that were following politics extremely closely, right? Your average American had no idea who the man was. And now in the span of 18 months, he is practically a household name. Yeah.
Yep. Right up there with Kamala Harris. And ironically, they are both top presidential candidates for the Democrats in 2020. It's funny how that happens. But back to our timeline, September 23rd. So at this point, this would be just 2 days ago at the point of recording here, back on Sunday, Christine Ford agrees to testify publicly at a committee hearing on September 27th, which is going to be this coming Thursday. So Grassley says that Kavanaugh will testify after Ford. Later that day, the New Yorker releases a report that a second woman has come forward with allegations of sexual assault. Also against Kavanaugh, Deborah Ramirez, she's a woman who attended Yale University with Kavanaugh back in the 80s, said that Kavanaugh exposed himself to her at a dorm party, quote-unquote, thrusting his penis in her face. And the alleged incident took place between 1984 and 1985 academic year, according to the story. Now, one important part of said allegation is that in this, Ramirez says that both she and all those who were in said incident were all pretty much blackout drunk. And I think that's also, again, we're just stating the facts, not saying, you know, that she's making it up one way or another, just stating the unequivocal facts. So they were again, alcohol involved, which just is the same as with Christine Ford.
Yeah, and that was one of the main parts of the story, was that everybody was drunk. She was pretty much passed out. She was, like, you know, dozing off, like, eyes fluttering open and closed. And she says in the actual document that she turned over and there was a penis, and she said, wait, that's not a real penis. Like,
I shouldn't laugh at this, but just like the
it's just so weird. Like, you don't expect that to come out whenever you're reading, like, whenever you're reading USA Today, you don't expect that to be in an allegation against someone who's running for the or being confirmed for the Supreme Court.
Did you watch The Office?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I don't know why, but all I could think about was it was season 8 when James Spader has become the new boss. He's Robert California. And he's like, he does this thing where he, like, just walks around and he'll look at somebody, and then they get really nervous because he might have, like, a one-on-one with them. And he looks at Erin, and she's like, oh, okay, we're starting now. And then he goes up and he's like, Erin, describe your day. And she goes, well, I woke up, I brushed my teeth. He's like, no. Never start talking about your day with, I woke up. That's how everybody has woken up since the dawn of man. She's like, okay. Suddenly, I awoke. That's all I think about. Suddenly, there was a penis. I'm sorry. We're not laughing at the allegations. We're laughing at the words that you're reading here. It's 2018. Like, nothing makes sense anymore. The writers who are writing this script are just throwing shit on the wall, hoping it sticks at this point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And what is I don't want to say funny, because if the situation itself that she describes is not a funny situation.
No, it's not funny. It's not
at all. But one of the, we had Chris Spangle's birthday party, and someone brought a strap-on dildo as like a gag gift. And co-host Harry Price had put it on and was walking around just nonchalantly. And that's what I thought about whenever I read this, because it was like, man, I wonder like if years from now Harry is trying to run for office or something, and we're like, I saw him, we were drunk at a party, had on a purple dildo, and he was walking around and he put it in Jeremiah Morrill's face. That's the only thing that I could think of whenever I read this, because the wording is just so strange, and like I said, the situation is not funny at all. It's a horrible thing for a person to ever even think about going through, but it's just reading that in a mainstream news article was so bizarre.
Yeah, and we're gonna, so again, we're laying out the facts of the case. What is the timeline of events? And we're gonna give our opinions at the end, but again, this is in no way, shape, or form to discredit sexual assault victims, to discredit those who come forward with their stories. We really want to again lay out the timeline so we all have an objective look of what's actually happening. So if, in case you were, you know, Team Kavanaugh or Team Ford, which it's sick that there's even teams at this point, you know, you at least know really what's actually happening outside of whatever echo chamber it is you find yourself in where you're getting the news. So then going forward, really, go ahead.
Just reiterating, can't say it enough that we're not picking sides in this. It's just purely for the facts. I didn't want this to be an emotionally charged episode full of just opinions.
I mean, I'm not sure. Do you listen to Steven Crowder by chance?
No, I do not.
So I'll listen every now and then, and I notice on the podcast feed, Steven Crowder had an episode about Christine Ford. And I was like, okay, I'll listen to the more conservative approach. I just want to hear what the argument is. And you know, he called her a lying bee. And I was like, dude, like, come on. Like, nobody knows the details of the facts because, again, it's 36 years ago. And nobody can know 100% certain, besides Christine Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, what the truth is. So for anybody to assert, you know, with 100% confidence that she's lying or that he's lying is just complete BS. You can't do that objectively because we don't know. Like, we quite literally don't know, and there's no way to know. So just, again, to kind of give a perspective, that's where we're approaching this. Again, with complete, you know, basically we're agnostic to the fact that the realities of what happened. What we're trying to do is present what we know, what we can, you know, everybody can look at a spade and call it a spade instead of saying, well, that's actually a heart. So we're trying to be as objective as possible. So with that, last few things on the official timeline. So September 24th, which was Monday, Kavanaugh sends a letter to Grassley and Feinstein declaring, quote, he will not be intimidated into withdrawing from this process. Quote, the coordinated effort to destroy my good name will not drive me out. The vile threats of violence against my family will not drive me out. The last minute character assassination will not succeed. Trump then went out of his way to blast the allegations against Kavanaugh as, quote unquote, totally political, saying I am with him all the way. And then later that evening, Kavanaugh and his wife Ashley went on to Fox News and Martha McCallum's show. And Kavanaugh says, all I'm asking for is a fair process where I can be heard. Kavanaugh still denies the claims of sexual assault, claiming, this is going to be so awkward for him on TV, I've been a virgin even after college, and all of his sexual purity was very important to him. I mean, that's
what I was talking about earlier whenever we were talking about if you're his lawyer, you just want him to go on there and say no.
Yep.
Right? You want to say as little as possible, but he brought up so many personal details of his life whenever he was in high school. He was the 17 and then later in college. And
I think he feels obligated to, like, he, I mean, again, let's just remove ourselves really quick and put ourselves in his situation. Like, if you were being lambasted on a national stage, basically like calling out the core fabric of who you are as a person. And like, they're saying you did one of the most dirty, disgusting, horrible things you can do to somebody else, If let's just say it was not true, like let's assume for a moment that Kavanaugh's telling the truth, like I can't blame him for wanting to go on and be like, no, dude, I didn't do this, and like say this is why I didn't do it. Like I can't imagine putting myself in his shoes at this point. If for a fact he's telling the truth.
Yeah, for the sake of the argument that you're making, we're saying it didn't happen and it is a lie, then that would be, that is one of the things that I read today that I thought, whoa, you know, because it was like, this is different. Not sure what to make of this whole scenario, because it's like, it just seemed like it wasn't him going on there and reading a script, only saying the things that his lawyers told him to say. It really, in my opinion, did seem genuine. But without knowing the person, I don't know him. I've never obviously met the guy, so it's not. I can't make a judgment of his character or how he acts normally. But if it just seemed like it was like him and his wife were legitimately upset that this was happening.
And last little timeline here, and it's not even on. It's not even on our timeline events there at Dakota because it just came out. So just now, here we are, September 25th. Republicans in the Senate Judiciary Committee have stated they are going to be holding the vote regardless to push Kavanaugh to a full Senate vote on Friday. So that has officially been declared. I do declare, as Michael Scott would say. So that is going to be happening this coming Friday, which is going to be September 28th. That's when the vote's going to be held. I'm going to guarantee that there is going to be a lot of outrage because the push from the pro-Ford camp slash anti-Kavanaugh camp slash Believe All Women camp is that you're rushing this. We can't rush these women and their experiences with sexual assault, and we're not allowing their story to be heard. So putting this deadline on Friday, it's just a means to silence these women.
Well, and I totally understand that argument too.
Yeah.
I really do. Like that actually it makes sense to me because it's just so hard if you're looking at this from if you're trying to remove your personal emotion and just look at the facts, then it's like you look at it and you think you get done reading all this. Like I spent probably 3 hours just today reading everything I could that was not an emotionally charged opinion piece, and I came out of it going, I still don't know. Like,
yeah,
I, you know,
yeah,
it's a classic case of just he said, she said, and not knowing who to believe.
And what's sad is that okay. Now this is the part. Let's get to a little bit of like some commentary, right? So this is the part that sucks because the reality of the situation, and we kind of alluded to earlier, is that there is no way to know 100% whether or not she's telling the truth or he's telling the truth. And I think it's so hard for people because we're in this type of society where we have to be able to know definitively, you know, yes, he did it, or no, he didn't. And then that's kind of the way that we approach any day-to-day situation or you know, instance in our own lives. But we can't do this here, not only because it really is taking two people at each other's word, but then you throw in the variable being the time. I mean, we're 36 years removed from the alleged incident, and that doesn't discredit if she's telling the truth, which I very much believe that there's a chance she is telling the truth. The problem is that here we are in 2018 trying to look at accusations from 36 years ago as if it was something that we could objectively analyze 36 years later, as if it just happened. And there, unfortunately for her case, and I think it hurts the overall Me Too movement because they're latching on to Christine Ford now with Ramirez, is that there are no corroborating witnesses. The only people who have been brought up categorically deny that they experienced what was said to have happened. And the sucky part of everything as well is that in each instance, alcohol was involved to the point that each person was inebriated to the extent that, you know, are they remembering things correctly? And I'm not trying to cast an opinion one way or another. I'm just saying that's if you are in the pro Ford or pro Ramirez camp or just the pro believe women camp, that's what the argument from those on the other side is going to be, is that there's no way to know for certain what the truth is. And with that, you might be taking someone who is innocent and or just, you know, misidentified, wrongly accused, and you're destroying that person's life, you're destroying their reputation based on not knowing. And that's the real issue, I think, that a lot of people are looking at, and they want to believe women. Like, I mean, we just saw today, obviously, right down the road from me, Bill Cosby. You know, Bill Cosby just got sentenced to, I think it was 3 to 10 years in jail for his assault and slash rape of someone back in 2004. But that went to court. You know, that he was being held in, held in a jury, voted on by a jury of his peers. Whereas with Kavanaugh, it's a vote basically of public opinion. And it's a really nasty situation because there is no right way to approach this, and each side is going to be upset with whatever the outcome is going to be.
Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it's like, yeah, you throw the instance of time in there, and of course all of the people who are pro Kavanaugh want to just come out and say, well, the fact that she didn't come forward 35 years ago just tells you that it's fake. And you're like, no, you've obviously never looked into other cases of sexual assault and harassment, because a lot of times it does take a long time. And her story of going to a family counselor with her husband and then making the realization that this actually did have an impact on her, it aligns well with a lot of other stories of harassment that you hear. So it's obviously the timeline is not something that you can just go, oh, well, that totally discredits it, because that's not true at all. So it is another part of this investigation that if you're sitting on the Senate committee, then you think, well, this is kind of weird, right? It's not something that it's again one of those things you don't just totally throw all the allegations out because of it, but it is something that you have to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. And one thing too, I think it's important for people to when you look at someone like Bill Cosby, right? And I'm just going to use Bill Cosby because it's you know, quite contemporary right now. He was just sentenced today. Bill Cosby had 30 plus accusers of people who experienced the exact same thing that I forget the name of the official plaintiff or the official prosecutor in this case for Bill Cosby. Her name escapes me, but it's not just one instance. It's 30 plus women who have come forward saying, yes, I experienced the exact same thing that she did. Harvey Weinstein, you have boatloads of women who have come forward saying, he's a sexual predator. This is what he did to me. And then with Judge Kavanaugh, it's one instance from 36 years ago, and then another instance from 35 years ago, and both have so much gray area around them that it's hard to make a definitive decision one way or another. And part of that, just to kind of, again, give some perspective, a lot of people are nervous to jump on the believe Ford and Ramirez in this instance, not believe all women, but believe these two instances. They're looking at it at a, you know, at each one as an individual case, because we look back just you know, in the past 10 years, you had the Duke LaCrosse case, and then you had the University of Virginia Rolling Stone case, where basically you had two instances of women who said that they were raped, and it was, you know, very similar in cases where you have these privileged white athletes, they were in fraternities, and they were accused of raping these two women. And in each case, people who didn't instantly believe the quote-unquote, again, believe the women, they were labeled as you know, rape enablers. They were labeled as anti-women. And then when you get into the actual meat and potatoes of the cases, it turns out it was completely fake. And that's why so many people are nervous, because we look at what's happening right now with the politicization of anything that has to do with Trump, and people come into any instance of anything Trump touches from the right saying, okay, well, what's fake here? What's being misconstrued here? And they approach it with a very real sense of skepticism. And I don't think it's necessarily unfounded. And that's just a sad, gross reality of where we are in 2018, not only in politics, but as a society, where we've gotten so into this tribal camp one way or another that it's just destroying our ability to have real conversations with people, to the point that now we're having instances of alleged sexual assault, and it's pushing people into one camp or another without trying to look at the facts objectively. It just sucks, man.
Yeah, it sucks. But I do think that even these cases where the accuser has been found out to be lying and fabricating a story, I still think that I don't want to say that our default position should always be believe the woman, but I think that it's our view as people who are not involved in the case, who do not have a say in how these things actually turn out and how they go, our default position should be, let's look at this seriously, because it's a serious allegation.
Agreed.
Right?
100%. So
it's not, let's look at this and, oh, just always believe the woman no matter what, but definitely look at it and take it very seriously and don't dismiss things because little tiny pieces of the puzzle are being confirmed in your mind to show that it's fake. Mm-hmm. So that's, it's a huge picture and it's a jigsaw puzzle right now. And I mean, that's our justice system just has to try to work through it. Right. And speaking broadly of all cases, not just Kavanaugh or Bill Cosby, but it's you have to have faith in our justice system. And I know that there's been a lot of miscarriages of justice that have happened, but we typically do a pretty good job here in the United States of finding out what is true and what is not true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard because it's, I mean, sexually assaulting a person is one of the most heinous things that a human being can do to another human being.
Absolutely.
So, it's just not a good situation at all in which we find ourselves. And our age of information, I mean, it hasn't helped necessarily either, because we're innocent until proven guilty in the eyes of the law and judged in front of a jury of your peers. But if your case is a high profile case, mm-hmm. then everybody knows what they think are specific details.
Yep.
It's a difficult situation, but I guess that we have institutions that you have to try to put faith in, which might not sound good on a libertarian podcast.
And that's the thing, is like, I've said it, but I'll restate it, is that we've gotten into this mindset that we need to have a definitive answer one way or another to know what the truth is. And the problem is it's hard. Like, it's hard to know what the absolute truth is, and that's just a reality of, you know, not only where we are in 2018, but just, you know, with these type of nitty-gritty cases in general. And I think that's why today's episode that we did, it's so important to have this conversation and lay out the facts as they are. Like, what we can look at and both agree, whether you're on one side of the argument or the other, say, okay, well, this is the timeline, this is what we know, and then for people to make an objective opinion and an objective decision, ultimately looking at what's going to happen come Friday in their vote to move Kavanaugh out of committee towards the Senate. I want to believe that he will get out of the committee because it is Republican dominated, and then the real question comes, you know, is the case laid out by Dr. Ford and Ms. Ramirez, is it strong enough to sway the votes of those more moderate / inquisitive individuals in the Senate who aren't necessarily ready to you know, be an automatic vote for Kavanaugh? And if so, what does that lead to? Does that lead to Judge Amy Barrett being nominated if Kavanaugh fails, you know, getting his blessing from the Senate? And if so, what does that open up down the road? You know, what will her confirmation be like? It's gonna be very telling for sure.
You and I will have to do a separate episode if that happens, because I just at this point I just feel like we need to get through Friday and see what the heck's going on, man. Because it's crazy. And yeah, we've delivered all of these facts. We delivered a timeline and objective truths that we know. But I mean, I put all this together and I still don't know. Like, yeah.
You can't know. That's the part that sucks. Like, having this type of podcast, like, I would much rather talk about, like, libertarian PR and, like, how to bring people towards the idea of liberty than having a conversation about something so dark and just, I don't know about you, but, like, this kind of stuff makes you feel dirty. Like, you're just like, this sucks. Like, that we have to have a conversation about someone possibly doing one of the worst things you can do to another human being. Like, just having the conversation sucks. And I agree with the argument, we need to have those conversations. But, like, when you're seeing a conversation like this weaponized by both sides of the political aisle, it just really, it brings me down. It makes me, like, really, really, not optimistic for the future of our politics, and I'm just like scared. I'm truly scared at the idea of people weaponizing like the Me Too movement to justify their political means. I mean, I'm already seeing people in the conservative realm of politics who are saying, "Fine, liberals want to play this game. The leftists want to play this game where they're bringing out people from high school to go after you know, particular individuals that were being nominated from the conservative side of things. Well, you wait. We're going to start looking at Cory Booker's high school. We're going to start looking at," and you go down the line of all these people they're ready to take down because the left has opened up the door. And yeah.
That to me is gross. It's absolutely disgusting.
It's disgusting.
What you're saying is that the average high schooler has something in their past that is as horrible as attempted rape. And right. That has been one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen through this, is that the amount of conservatives and hardcore Trump Republicans that are like, "Well, this he was just learning how to be with women." My God. Like, how? No. That's not how you learn to be with women. The average 17-year-old might try to kiss a girl at her locker or something and get rejected. That, I mean, sure, I can see that, but you don't freaking, that's disgusting. And the fact that I've actually seen that from people on social media, it's horrifying that it's 2018. It is the current year, and we still have people that live amongst us that think that, "Oh, well, it was just a different time. Boys will be boys." That's no.
Social media is a blessing to humanity, but it's also a really big curse to humanity, because it's amazing that we can share information at the speed of light to anybody across the world. The downside is that information can be true. That information can be false. It allows us to embed ourselves more firmly into our own echo chambers. And I'm not sure yet. I think we're going to look back, you know, 100 years from now, when you have people looking back at society circa 2018 and look at what the tool that is the internet did to our society in terms of the ability to have conversations with one another, I think it's going to be, you know, two gigantic bubbles on either end of the spectrum in terms of people actually being able to have these real conversations and to be able to talk to people outside of their comfort zone. But then on the other side, just this fostering of negativity and tribalism and groupthink and disdain towards the other camp. And I'm just, it sucks, because I just feel that's the way things are going to go. I hope I'm wrong. And with that, I wanted to end the show with a little bit more positivity. So, Dakota Davis, over in Indiana, Boss Hog of Liberty, what do you guys have going on this week that people can look forward to?
Well, this week we are, of course, our show is very locally focused, but everybody in the United States lives in a county, and it seems like 90% of the people were raised in a town our size. One of our biggest fans and longtime supporter of the show, Craig DaCosta, came up and visited us in Henry County, and he is actually from Hawaii, so, I mean, he gets something out of the show. And it's this week we have a little bit of a different episode coming up. We have the local chapter president for the League of Women Voters. She's going to be coming on and talking to us for about 20 to 30 minutes about what it is that they do here locally, what the League of Women does, what they do on a local level, and how they try to get people to the polls in different communities across the U.S. And then Henry County has this expo center being built, and it is a $5 million facility. It sits on 65 acres or something like that. It's huge. It's a huge place that is going to bring a lot to our community. And it so far it's been funded. Just a fraction of that $5 million has come from public taxpayer money. They are trying to raise the vast majority of it through private donations and through local businesses donating to have events there. And the president of that board for the Expo Center is going to be coming on tomorrow as well and speaking with us about what they do, what places like that bring to communities, cities, and counties, and how they intend to pay for it, and how they intend to maintain it, and the other economic implications that places like that bring. So she's going to be coming on and talking about that. We're very fortunate in Henry County. We have a very liberty-minded populace over here. Our county party, I'm the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Henry County, and our county is about to have a grand opening for our brand new headquarters as well. So it's there's a lot going on here, and we're very fortunate to have some good local leaders that are watching out fiscally for the people. So like this expo center, it's with the amount of startup money that they got from the taxpayer was very small, and the fact that they are going to try to do it on their own, I think, speaks volumes about us. And I think that if other people around the country will listen to it, they can realize that there are solutions that aren't necessarily government whenever it comes to funding projects like that.
Basically, it's the opposite of any NFL city with any NFL stadium.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
it's billions of dollars in taxpayer revenue that's going in to build these you know, monoliths of gigantic, you know, almost like Roman Colosseum like structures that, you know, are going to be built and then destroyed in 30 years.
Yeah, they're a modern Colosseum, and there are a lot of places here in Indiana that have been building centers like the Expo Center that we are getting in Henry County that I know a lot of the local libertarian parties here in the state have spoken out against, because these places are going to be like $12, $15 million complexes, and all of the money is going to be it's all going to be taxpayer funded. All the staff is going to be taxpayer funded. And here we have a 501c3 organization in our county that is trying to do this on its own, and also trying to just provide something good for the community without it costing us an arm and a leg. It's pretty neat. We're very fortunate here. And it'll be even better once Jeremiah gets on the council.
Yeah, shameless plug there for Jeremiah Morrill. Where can folks go ahead and find you guys over on social media, and where can people find you, Dakota Davis?
So for Boss Hog of Liberty, we are on Facebook. That's where we are the most active, is Facebook. Just search Boss Hog of Liberty. It's there's only one G in hog, not like the TV show where there's two. On Twitter, you can find us at Liberty Boss, and we're somewhat active on there. And, of course, our website, BossHogLiberty.com. You can find us on all your podcatchers, iHeartRadio. We're also on YouTube, BossHogLiberty. We put out high-definition videos of all of our podcasts and bonus content. You can also find us on our Patreon account. We put out a lot of bonus content for our Patreon subscribers. My wife and I, Audrey, me and her do a conspiracy theory podcast about 3 times a month that gets put out exclusively for those folks over there. And they've been able to provide us with a state-of-the-art studio over here in downtown Newcastle in a newly renovated building. And we're very fortunate. You can find me on Facebook at Dakota Davis, and then on Twitter at Atokad Savad, which is just Dakota Davis spelled backwards.
Clever. Man, I wish I had a nice studio. I'm broadcasting from the Cradle of Liberty in my Philadelphia studio. Yeah, it's not really a big, nice, fancy studio like you guys have there. I'm not that level yet. But one day we'll have a nice studio for you guys, and maybe we'll even bring in some video. At this point, Brian Nichols Show, it's as bare bones as it could possibly be, while at the same point in time trying to be a podcast that brings content forward to folks with issues they care about. So, hey.
Yeah, you do a great job over there on the Brian Nichols Show. You are absolutely one of the best interviewers that's out there. I would rather sit and listen to you talk and give an interview than I would Dave Rubin any day of the week.
I'm humbled to hear that, honestly. Like, I really, Chris Spangle, dear leader, gave Dakota and I a platform today to not only discuss the Kavanaugh issue, but also to kind of plug our own shows at the end so you guys can learn more about not only the Boss Hug of Liberty, but also the Brian Nichols Show. So, heck, let's take it. So, my show, for folks who are a little curious, I'm not your traditional libertarian podcast. I'm not going to have, the libertarian groupthink folks on to just, reaffirm and stroke our confirmation biases. I really try to break out beyond the traditional means of libertarian echo chambers and to bring people into my show who I don't necessarily agree with and I don't think my audience is going to agree with, but to have a real conversation, to learn areas of agreement, but also areas of disagreement, and then to find ways that we can work together to promote those common goals. So I've had people on my show who are, far left socialists. I had a guy running up in upstate New York. He's running as a Democratic socialist, part of the Bernie Sanders camp, and he plugged Democratic socialism in my show. And, we had a fun little back and forth, and I definitely went on my way to ask him a few questions and challenge him on a few things. But then I'll have somebody like, Adam Kokesh or Jeffrey Tucker, or I stole one from you guys, Steve Horowitz on my show, who also is from upstate New York, so wasn't really stealing. He's basically, kin to Jeremiah and I. But really, the idea is to leave my audience feeling educated, enlightened, and informed. And that, it unfortunately, in today's era, that requires having people feel uncomfortable, and I think people need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable in order to promote our ideas forward and actually have some real substantive change. So for my show this week, it's a little bit of a weird week. I'm not only doing the We Are Libertarians touch that we're doing today, but I also am going to be having Michael Hutchins on. So Michael just finished up a phenomenal book. It's called Irreconcilable Politics, Our Rights Under a Just Government. So I'm going to be having him on. We're going to discuss the ideas of collectivity, reforming government, voluntary government, voluntaryism, interrelationships between political ideologies and central government decisions, which it's going to be much more of an in-depth libertarian-leaning podcast. But then next week, I'm going to go back to having some folks running for office, and up in my neck of the woods, up in northern New York, I'm actually having Republican Assembly candidate Mark Walczyk on my show. So Mark is not running against the guy I had on 2 weeks ago, but the districts are right next door to each other, and Mark is a phenomenal guy. I've known Mark for about 20 some odd years. He actually was one of the head members of Senator Patty Ritchie's staff. She's a senator up in northern New York State. And he's just a very down-to-earth, driven guy. He'll give you the shirt off his back, and he's one of the libertarian, curious, libertarian-leaning representatives that I will 100% take as a Republican to be a representative. And he has a phenomenal shot to actually win the seat, which has been held by a Democrat since 2008. Actually, it's been longer than that, because the guy before, he ran for Senate, Daryl Albertine, and he won back for a while. So it's been a Democratic seat, I think, actually since the district was created back in 2002. So he has a phenomenal chance to not only to get rid of a leftist politician, but then to be able to bring libertarian, I say libertarian, small L libertarian principles to Albany, which would be a phenomenal win for us. So that's what's coming up here on the Brian Nichols Show over the next few weeks. But with that being said, I'll do a little hat tip here to dear leader Chris Spangle. Any final thoughts, Dakota Davis, on today's episode?
Well, I just wanted to say I hope that we didn't come across, or at least I didn't come across any sort of way as trying to downgrade the situation of Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford find themselves, because I think that it's incredibly difficult for whoever is telling the truth, either side. If either side is telling the truth and one side is lying, obviously, then whoever is telling the truth, this has to be just such a mental stressor to them. And I hope that I didn't downplay any of that. And of course, I do want to say that if there are any listeners that have gone through any type of abuse, then it is never too late to actually speak out and tell somebody about it. Even if it was 36 years ago, it's still not too late. And even though you might see, at least I see in rural Indiana Facebook, that there's been a lot of conservatives that have just come out and said that all of this is just a bunch of BS, and I don't believe that. I think that there's got to be truth somewhere on some side, but I honestly don't know where it's at.
Agreed, and I'll say for my final thoughts, I'll kind of echo your sentiments. The reality is sexual assault, it knows no politics. It knows no particular ideology. It's something that impacts not only women, but also men across all political spectrums. And I say men because obviously Terry Crews, he came out discussing his experience with sexual assault, which is it itself is also, a terrible act. But I have female friends who they've gone through some horrible things that they've spoke to me about behind the scenes, and just know that we're with you. We're not discrediting what you say. And again, I want to make sure, as you've said, Dakota, and I hope the audience leaves today's episode understanding, we don't want any woman to feel that they can't come forward. We don't want any woman to feel that what your experience isn't validated because people question it. Looking at what happens right now with Christine Ford, it's because of the politics around it, and it's terrible. Just know that, like you said, Dakota, that there are people out there willing to listen. We want to hear your story, and it's really the first step with the Me Too movement, watching the likes of people like Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby face really the consequences for their actions, these decades-long actions that took place. And just know that it's tough, but there are people out there who are willing to really stand by you throughout this entire awful experience. And yeah, we do believe women, 100%. That's not a question. So just know that when you leave this episode, please don't assume one way or another that we're promoting a pro rape apologist mindset. That's not what we're doing. We're trying to lay out the facts, and hopefully you leave today's episode with a better understanding of what actually is taking place with the larger Kavanaugh accusations and his confirmation hearing. But With that, Mr. Dakota Davis, thank you so much for joining me today on the We Are Libertarians Network as a fill-in hosts for the greater We Are Libertarians flagship show.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did a pretty good job, if I say so myself. I think we made Chris proud with this one.
I was going to say, hopefully dear leader is pleased by our efforts this evening. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's Brian Nichols signing off from The Brian Nichols Show. For Dakota Davis of the Boss Hog of Liberty, this has been We Are Libertarians. We'll talk to you later on.